passed through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans."
Okay. Jesus is in a place that Jews weren't used to going to. Galilee is in the north, Samaria, and then you have Judea, where Jerusalem is at, in the south, part of the country. If you wanted to go from Galilee to Jerusalem, or Jerusalem to Galilee, through Samaria, but most Jews did not do that. Most Jews would go all the way out on the other side of the Jordan River, go up, and then come back in to Galilee. They would not go through Samaria. Jesus is going through Samaria, which is a different culture. Why were the Samaritans so disliked by the Jewish people?
They have Jewish, half-Gentile?
Yes. If you remember the Assyrian captivity of the northern 10 tribes, you will study that this year with Mike. But when Assyria comes in 722 and finishes what they had been chipping away at for a number of years, the final taking of all 10 tribes of the north in the divided kingdom, they take them, and they take the men particularly. Not exclusively, but mostly, they take the men of who are their captives, take them off into their country. So this would have been eastern Turkey, northern Iraq, northern Iran, and they just dispersed them, leaving their wives and children behind for the mercenary soldiers. And the soldiers who were part of the Assyrian army who were retiring, part of their pay for going and taking this was to give the women, the children, and the land of these men to those soldiers. That was their pay. And so all of these Assyrians who were the enemy of Israel intermarry now, take as wives these Jewish wives and women, and now then you've got sleeping with the enemy kind of a picture going on here, and they become very hated. The offspring over the years become very hated because they are the enemy, represent the enemy to the Jewish people, and they are certainly not fully Jewish, pure Jew.
Mm-hmm. So, like, did they still adhere to, like, Jewish custom, or, you know?
Some, yes. But they weren't really adhering to Jewish customs like they should have been even before the captivity.
Yeah.
But there, I mean, you can even see with the woman at the well, she says, "We worship here, and you worship in Jerusalem." They did not worship at the temple. They did not offer the sacrifices at the temple like they were supposed to, and that sort of thing. They had their own. But all that was set up by Jeroboam long from the very beginning of the northern 10 tribes as a divided kingdom and everything. He'd set up their own places of worship and everything. So they were a little bit, but not really. Yeah. There was a real divide between them. So here is Jesus. I would say he's going into a different culture than the culture he was used to being a part of. He was born in the south. He was raised in the north. And everything. Samaria was not home to him at all. He's in a different culture. And yet here he is engaging this woman. That's the second thing she says. What is her concern in this passage? What does she say? How is it that you, what? Being a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan, for a drink. I am a Samaritan woman. Both of those are issues. It was not common at all for a Jew and a Samaritan to have a conversation with one another. That's why when Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, that is an oxymoron to most of the Jews hearing that story, because there were no good Samaritans in their mind. Okay? It's also very out of culture, wrong in their culture for a man and a woman who are not married to each other to be out there having this conversation with one another. That just was not customary at all either. And so she's concerned about both of those things, but here is Jesus. It doesn't matter. He's having this conversation with her, and the conversation is very intriguing when you go through it. There's a lot of playing around going on in terms of words that are being used, and she's being rather suggestive at times when you really study what's being said. But Jesus engages her, and he is willing to do that. Go out of the comfort zone of his culture into her culture. Okay? Look at James chapter 2. By the way, does he end up being an intentional blessing to her as well? Yeah, he does. But he's engaging her in her culture. He's going to her where she's at and engaging her. James chapter 2. Verses 14 to 17. Could somebody read those? In stereo.
What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have work? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things they needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead.
Okay. So just especially, I mean, we can look at the faith and works situation as well some other time, but in verses 15 and 16 of that, if a brother or sister is without clothing or in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm, be filled, and you don't do anything and everything, James is saying, really? Really? Look up at chapter 1, verse 27. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. To do what? First, to visit, to go to get involved with them. Who? Orphans and widows. Those who are not able to help themselves, but it's the idea of going to them, taking initiative in their world. Again, it's culturally engaging. It's going to where they are. I can be an intentional blessing without ever meeting a person, without ever engaging them whatsoever. I can do that. Culturally engaged, now, I'm stepping into their culture. And what that means is I'm stepping into a culture that's not part of my normal daily life and part of my daily living and that sort of thing. I mentioned before that across the street and right next door from where we live is a Muslim guy next door and a Muslim family across the street. You know, they're not very far away, but when I engage Mickey across the street or Omar next door, that is a form of cultural engagement because it's stepping outside of my normal culture. Not just my faith culture, but in terms of the culture that their whole lifestyle culture and everything. They're just different, so I'm stepping into that. If I get involved in Serve Fresno or some other kind of thing, I'm culturally engaging others in my community that probably are not part of the culture I'm used to being with. If I go on a short-term mission trip, I'm engaging another culture that's not part of my regular routine and part of my regular life. Okay? So I'm going to someone else and doing all that and engaging them. And again, all of this coming out of the core and developing and wanting to do that. Now then, let's talk about inclusive community. I want us to do something a little different. Look at Luke. We're going to spend the rest of our time in a few passages in Luke. Luke chapter 5. Could someone read verses 27 through 32 of Luke chapter 5?
He went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And leaving everything, he rose and followed him. And Levi made him a great feast in his house, and there was a large company of tax collectors and others reclining at the table with him. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance."
Okay. So tell me what's happening in terms of what we've been talking about. What's happening in verses 27 and 8? Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
Jesus calls the tax collector.
Okay, and what is that? Does that have anything to do with this outer ring? What's going on here? I'm sorry? Okay, he's engaging him. Tax collectors were outcasts, as we see. I mean, isn't it interesting that the elite Jewish are constantly referring to them as tax gatherers and sinners? They're lumped together in this group. And the tax collectors are always mentioned first as being the worst. They're even worse than just regular sinners and everything. And so here he is. He's engaging him. What is he doing, though? He's inviting him into his world. Follow me. Come with me. So inclusive community. He's bringing him in. What does Levi do in verses 29 to 32? What is he practicing?
He brings him into his group.
Yeah, he brings him, Jesus, into his home. What else does he do?
Jesus eats with
them. Huh?
Jesus eats with them.
Jesus eats with them. But what does Levi do? He invites Jesus in. Jesus eats with him. But who else does Levi engage with? Other tax gatherers and sinners, okay? People who were outcasts of the Jewish leadership of Israel. He is including them. He's bringing them into his home. Levi is practicing inclusive community here. Jesus practices it a little bit in terms of saying, come, be a part of my group, come follow me. Levi does it with his friends, invites them into his home. He's including them, bringing them into his home. And this is different. Inclusive community with an intentional blessing, I may never meet them. There's very little contact required. Cultural engagement, I'm engaging them. I'm involved with them, but I'm going to where they are. Inclusive community, I'm inviting them into my world, where I live. And quite frankly, we talked about it the early on. As we go through these, each one gets a little bit more challenging. It's very easy for me to be an intentional blessing to someone in terms of it may cost me a little money or something like that, or a little something, but it doesn't require necessarily much time, much energy, much sacrifice. It eliminates the fear or anything. I mean, it's just doing that. But when I culturally engaged, I'm having to engage with people. I'm stepping into their world. That may be a little bit more uncomfortable for me, and that sort of thing. The first time I went over and introduced myself, and we gave a homewarming gift to the couple across the street from us, Mickey and his wife. That knowing they were Muslim, it was a little intimidating. What do we say? What do we do? What do we not do? What are we going to offend them in some way by stepping into their house with our shoes on? Or, I mean, we didn't know exactly, and so there was an uncomfortableness about that. Am I going to do this right? And am I going to offend them in some way or upset them? So it was more uncomfortable that way. But then to invite somebody into your world is even more, because all of a sudden your home stops being a place of refuge, a place where it's just you, where it's safe and secure, and now then it's become a hospital. It's become a place where you're inviting people to come in and be a part of your world, and they see you more for who you really are. They see your family, or if you have, you know, whatever your case may be, but they see more about you, how you live your life. It's harder to have a facade on for them to see. It's pretty easy on Sir Fresno or something like that to go put on a great face of compassion for a day or two with some other folks. It's another thing for them to come into your home and to be involved with you. Not just, an inclusive community is not just into your home. It could be other ways, but you're inviting them to come and be with you in your world. Jesus didn't invite Levi into his home. He didn't have a home, per se, in the typical sense that we would think of and everything, but he invited him into his world. Come with me, follow me, and that sort of thing. Now then, look at Luke 15. Someone read the first couple of verses.
As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and vowed to bring him to the place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance.
Okay, thanks. Who's coming to whom now?
All the Pharisees are coming to Jesus.
Who?
And asking a question.
Okay, but go back to verse 1. Yeah, the tax gatherers and sent before Levi threw a party, and Jesus was the honored guest, and Levi invited all of these tax gatherers and sinners, his friends, to come to the party, to his home, to meet Jesus. What did Jesus say or do at that party with the tax gatherers and sinners? We don't know. There is no record of what he actually said to the tax gatherers and sinners. What we see him saying at Levi's party is in response to the religious leaders who are complaining that Jesus is with the tax gatherers and sinners. But we don't see his message or anything, any of his conversation with the tax gatherers and sinners. But when we come to Luke chapter 15, we realize whatever Jesus did or said at that party at Levi's house was something that was intriguing enough for them to now come to him. They're seeking him out. They're looking for him at this point. And what does he do in verse 2? It says he receives. That's the complaint. He receives tax gatherers and sinners. He brings them in. He's including them in his world and that sort of thing. And that was anathema to the Jewish leadership. You just don't do that. You don't associate with those people and everything. But here was Jesus practicing inclusive community. Come and be a part of my world. By the way, when you read Luke chapter 15 and you read these three stories, these three parables that Jesus tells, the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost son. When you read those with a mindset of middle-aged, wealthy businessmen. Because that's who these tax gatherers and sinners would have been predominantly. And think about these businessmen, these merchants, these people who dealt with money all the time and possessions were very important to them. When you talk about a lost sheep, you're talking about lost capital. You're talking about part of your stock, and you've got to deal with that. You talk about a lost coin, you're talking about money, losing money. You talk about a lost son, middle-aged businessmen, and how many of them had wayward sons and that sort of thing that they had to deal with. These stories would have resonated with these men that he was talking to at this point in time in a powerful way. But the point is, tax gatherers and sinners are coming to him now, and he's receiving them in. Look at Luke 19. By the way, the Gospel of Luke includes more people by name than any of the other Gospels. He makes more references to women and women by name than any other gospel by far, and just more people and by name than any other gospel by far. Luke is very detailed that way, giving names, not just the woman or the man or the cripple, or he gives them names, and he talks about a lot of people we don't see in any of the other gospels by name. Look at Luke 19, verses 1 to 10. Somebody read that.
Mary I have defrauded anyone of anything or restored fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost.
Okay. It's just an interesting thing to me as you trace the tax gatherers and sinners through the Gospel of Luke. You see them, first of all, at Levi's house, Levi being one of those tax gatherers, tax collectors, but he invites them to his house. Jesus says and does things with them. We don't know what, but it's intriguing enough. It's compelling enough. That they're seeking him out in Luke chapter 15. And Jesus teaches them about God, what God is like in those three parables. He speaks to them. And now we come to Luke 19, and obviously word about Jesus in the cadre of tax gatherers and sinners of Jerusalem, that group of people have, word about him has spread enough that now then here is Zacchaeus, the chief tax gatherer, the chief of them all, the guy that all the other tax collectors reported to. He's up in a tree looking to see this Jesus that all of his friends keep talking about as he's passing by. And what does Jesus do? Yeah, he invites himself over for dinner. He says, hey, come down from that tree. I'm going to go to your house today. It would be awfully hard for Jesus to say to him, come to my house, since he wasn't anywhere near his home. This is Jericho. This is the south. Jesus' home, if you will, was in Capernaum, which was way the very far north part of Galilee. He's not anywhere near, quote-unquote, home for him at all, so it's hard to invite him into his home. He invites himself into Zacchaeus' home. He says, I'm going to come be a part of your world, but you're going to do this with me, right? And, I mean, he is that forward with Zacchaeus and everything. He says, you and I have an appointment. We need to get together now. And so they get together and all that. Look at verse 10. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. He's come to do what first? To seek. Jesus, his antenna was up for the lost. He was looking for them. He was thinking about them. And that is something we need to understand, that God is working in our lives to help us have antennas that are open for, looking for opportunities with the lost. That's, if we're going to be like Jesus, that's part of who he designed us to become, is to be like him with our antennas up, looking for, sensitive to the reality of the lost around us. And be looking at that. Any questions, thoughts about this? Yes.
So, based on like those three, the intentional blessing to the community, cultural engagement. I guess I'm just wondering about like the Wells. Different people like kind of critique that, you know, like their theology of place, and even like the leaders at the Well, you know, talking about like, I don't know, just their theology of place. So it's like, well, based on those three things, like, how does that line up? You know?
Why don't you explain to the class theology of place?
Specifically choose where they're going to go, like live, where they're going to be, so that they can contrary to that. Like people have critiqued the well for like kind of the idea that like, oh, well, we can set up a site here at wherever it is, you know, but then really that's not really our home. It's just kind of like a base that we do things in. Really, we could leave that place at any point in time.
Are you talking about like the campuses that we have?
Yeah.
I don't know that. I mean, theoretically, our campuses, originally, we only owned two campuses, and we have had services at both of them for a long time. People come to this campus, for instance, from an hour in every direction. Our desire would be to have life groups in their communities and that sort of thing, and do those kind of things. But our campuses are regional only from a convenience point of view, not from a intentional blessing, culturally engaged, inclusive community point of view. They're just spread out to where people can get to them easier, invite people to them easier. People who go to Southeast tend to live more in Southeast, that or Sanger or somewhere in that area. Most people that go to FIG live closer to FIG than they do to some of the other campuses. So it's strictly for a convenience. It's not a strategy for reaching the community per se. Even though we've talked about that at times, we realize that's not something that happens. What we have encouraged, though, is for us to, and what I'm encouraging here in this too, is that we all live in a community, and it's where we live that we need to be focused on. We all work or go to school, or we're engaged other ways, and that becomes where we need to focus as well, and or whatever that may be. But wherever we find ourselves, that's what we ought to focus on. I think I've got some good friends here and some people who are or were on staff here who have chosen to move to other parts of town to engage. Do I have to do that? Why can't I engage? I'm not against that. I think that's great. They were choosing to culturally engage in a different part of town and live there. I live somewhere already, and I don't have to go anywhere else to be culturally engaged. I can do that in the neighborhood I live in as well. I don't feel less than because I didn't move to some other part of town. There might be some people who live in that part of town who move to my part of town to be culturally engaged where I'm at. I don't see either one being right or wrong. And I don't think our church campuses will ever, again, part of our philosophy is the church is not a building. The church is the people who make up the congregation, the congregation of believers who call themselves the well. That's the church, not a building. And buildings don't evangelize. Buildings don't culturally engage. Buildings don't do those things. It's the people. And so our focus has been more on be the church where you are, not whether it's where you live, where you work, where you play, that sort of thing, more than anything else. Does that begin to address or speak to what you're talking about, or?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Thoughts? Opinions?
Yeah. So I'm thinking like, thank you for addressing the part about like the campuses. So now I'm thinking about like the individuals of the church, the well community members. I think that the well has like a certain demographic bent, right?
Generally, it really, yes, but we are not. I think overall, probably yes. Yeah, not completely by any means.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking if there's like a demographic bent that's at least obvious to certain people, then if they're being like an intentional blessing in their communities and like in their areas of living, right? I'm just wondering about what about the demographics that maybe aren't represented by the well? Because, how are those people reached? You know, if they're not living, I don't know. You know, if we're all just reaching the people that we live around, mm-hmm. then it's like, what about the people that we don't live around? You know, that whole demographic of people that really isn't represented
mm-hmm.
at the well in general. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then I guess the second part that was kind of just like the whole time I was kind of wrestling with it was. Like, it almost seems like those three aspects, they could be, like, very, like temporary, I guess. You know, like, if I'm being an intentional blessing, you said one of the pitfalls of that was, like, well, you never have to meet them. You know, you could just do that. So that would be
mm-hmm.
The second one is, like, culturally engaged, right? So that's, like, you're going to meet with someone on a weekend, right? I don't know. It just seems like, well, at the end of the day, you get to go home, you know,
mm-hmm.
back to your house while they're still, like, wherever they're at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they see that, they're like, oh, well, yeah, this person's coming to me for, like, a Bible study one day of the week or whatever, but ultimately
mm-hmm.
they have to go home, you know? They never relate to, like, what I'm going through. My neighborhood, like the struggles we go through, you know. And then the last one was
inclusive community.
That's like the same thing. Instead of us going and like being in their setting, it's like, well, you come to my church, you know, you come to my home, you come to where I'm at. I don't know, it was just those three things that kind of just,
how is that any different than if I move to one of these lesser represented areas, don't I have a home that I go back to at night? I don't live on the street or in somebody else's home, or I mean, I still have a home or some place that I call home there that I can invite people into, but they're gonna leave at some point. I can go into their home and go, but I'm going to leave at some point. So there may be aspects of that that are true, but I mean, everything you just said, I can think of in my neighborhood just as well as if I lived in some other part of the neighborhood. I could go live across town someplace from where I live, but the odds of me having of the five neighbors that live next door on each side of me, across the street from them, and right across the street from me, those five neighbors, the odds of me having two Muslim neighbors are not any greater any part other part of town than they are right where I live. You know, and so I don't think the Muslim community is highly represented here at the well. So could I not make an argument that I'm going to a part of the community that's not represented in the well by just living where I live? Because 40% of my neighbors, immediate neighbors, are Muslim where I live right now. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah.
And I'm not putting down the other at all. I mean, I know some of the folks you're talking about, and I love them, and they are good friends, and everything, and I don't disagree with what they're doing at all. I think it's very commendable. I think it becomes less commendable when you feel like you have to move somewhere else than where you live to do all of this, because this isn't about location or that sort of thing as much. I mean, we have people that attend the well that live in every area and every aspect of this community, from southwest, southeast. We have people who attend here, and everything, and they can be a blessing where they live. If others want to join them in their community and everything, I think that's great, but I don't know that it's necessary for that to happen, for this to be lived out and everything. And I want to tell you, this isn't designed to be something that is temporary, or this is something that when it's truly done out of compassion for other people, we do it and we keep on doing it and that sort of thing. It's not something that just an in and out kind of a thing. But the same temptations can exist whether I live here or live in the Tower District or live in Southwest or live in Southeast. The same dangers, I mean, you can live a very isolated life and live in the Tower District. Just live in your own little bubble world and never engage with anyone. Just because I live there doesn't make me experience these things of intentional blessing and culturally engaged, inclusive community. It takes more than that. It takes something that's coming out of here for that to happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. Steve? If any man would come after me, Jesus said, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. We could talk a lot about what it means to take up your cross, but at least we can say it's going to cost us something. It's not safe to follow Jesus. It's not secure in the sense of no risks if we follow Jesus. So there are going to be risks, and we need to understand that. It's those risks that cause a lot of people to fear and shy away from truly following him and everything. But he says, if you're going to truly follow me, be my disciple, that it's going to cost you something. There's going to be risk involved. So that's part of it. The other part is, going back to the morally discerning that we talked about last week, part of that third ring, it affects culturally engaged, but quite frankly, it affects all areas of the compassions as well. And I think that there's got to be a lot of that moral discernment. What's going on here? Even asking ourselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? There are some people who are doing a lot of these things with the theological bent that by doing so we are making the world a better place, and we are creating the kingdom that God promised, and I think that's wrong, quite frankly. I don't think it's wrong to do good things, but I think the motivation can be wrong at times. Theologically, I think that Christ is going to establish his kingdom, and we need to do these things out of compassion, not in some sense of helping him out to achieve his ultimate purpose. So from my vantage point, that's it. But I think moral discernment, I think being willing to understand following Christ is not a risk-free proposition at all. There's going to be risk involved for everyone.
The one thing that I really like about this thing that's really been encouraging for me is just it starts off with the humbly submit heart, and I think that that kind of answers, because absolutely each one of these can have an absolute failure to it if you focus just on that.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the discerning part goes back to the heart. It's kind of like answer yours, like I went to be a missionary in Africa. They ministered more to me than anything else, and the biggest message I got is that they said America needs missionaries more than anything. We want to go be missionaries in America and stuff. And I came back and I was like, I minister to people in another country because, like, we know that they need it. But then coming home, I looked around at all the people that need it around me, and I think that that's kind of the thing, is just open your heart to your surroundings. Let it be a daily focus rather than just a task thing of, yeah, okay, tax collectors, and, oh, I'm going to go serve tax collectors because that's what Christ did. And I think we can get legalistic about
absolutely
things. And that's just what I love about the simplistic diagram, is if you just focus on the heart and the humbly submitted, because as soon as you look at, is pride linked to your decision?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that's been encouraging for me, is just deciding, is the decision pride-based or humbly-based?
Yeah.
Just a quick comment. It seems like some of these seem more relative to the individual than others. So, I mean, in the case of morally discerning, it seems like there is some degree of that it's relative to the individual. But these, at least these three, culturally engaged, inclusive community, and I think mostly those two, seem to be very relative to the individual, because the discipleship doesn't happen corporately. You know, discipleship happens one-on-one. Is that an accurate statement? Do you think that's that would be an accurate statement?
Sure. I mean, when you stop and think about why in the world did we get left here? If God and Christ's plan was simply to save people, then why, when I put my faith in Jesus Christ, did he leave me here? Because I'm saved. Why didn't he take me to be with him? Why didn't he take you? He left us here for a purpose. And he said, as you're going, make disciples, that's the command, of all the nations, baptizing and teaching them to observe what I taught you. And I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. I'm going to go with you. He's assuming we're going out. He's assuming we're doing something in the world called making disciples of other people. That's the command. And all of these three things are simply pictures of how Christ did that, and how we have been called in the New Testament, how God wants to use us to do that as well, is through, and again, these are not perfect terms. This is not a cookie cutter, simple, it's these three things and those three things only. You don't need to do any, there could be five, there could be seven, there could be two with broader categories. There, we could do all that kind of stuff, but we're just saying these are three ways we see Jesus reaching out, going, and everything. He's an intentional blessing to people without any expecting anything in return. Some of the people who touched Jesus, he did not necessarily even know who they were when they were healed. An intentional blessing. And it's most impersonal kind of way and everything. But he was also culturally engaged with the woman at the well and with so many other people. He was going into their culture and reaching out to them intentionally and then also inviting them in. So I just see those, that's ways that Jesus was in going out and everything. We could look at other ways, we could put other terms to it and everything, but that just seems, those are the terms I came up with, okay, for ways that he did this that are a little bit distinct from each other. There are dangers in every one of them. There are ways we can abuse every one of them, and we can do that. I agree with you that if it's truly coming from the heart and from that core, it's going to be different. And it's going to be different for each person, how that might happen and everything. Good work.
I think too, I just get so excited with this because it's just so beautiful in the sense that we're all in different life stages. We all have different circumstances, and God gives us all different burdens in our heart, all different, he brings different people in our life to reach. You know, I'm in children's ministry, and I'm teaching this to the kids, and it was like, okay, how can you be, you know, inclusive in your community? What can you do? Oh, I can invite this friend to come play with me at recess, you know? I can do this. And just getting them excited and getting them to see things in different perspectives. And I think that comes from the heart. Like he said, you know, God gives us different burdens in our heart.
Yeah.
It's also with working with, because I'm, this is my black, so I'm working in children's ministry. It's got to sound kind of weird, but I get sucked in there because she's my wife. She gets I work with youth ministry, and she gets sucked into that because, you know, we're dialoguing and we're ministering to youth and children. And within that, we're also ministering to the parents. Within that, yeah, we're also ministering to a grandparent. Within that, we're reaching out to families because the kids share, hey, you know what, I don't have tennis shoes or whatever, so we go off on that, and pretty soon you're not only doing children's ministry. Your environment is also the parent, the grandparent, neighbor, somebody's house burned down, so they need help. So it's just amazing how God does connects everything, and it's, don't ever underestimate your abilities or the gifts that God gave to each one of us in this room, or matter of fact in the church. You know, he willingly, if you're willing to step out in faith, you will make a difference. And honestly, every time I go into a new thing of ministering or helping somebody out or talking about Jesus, half of the time, 50% of the time, I'm like, did I mess it up? Did I do something wrong? Did I gain somebody for the kingdom? Did I glorify God? And at the end of the night, I lift it up to God, and God tells me, you did exactly what needed to be done, whether you messed up or not, whether you said the wrong thing. It's a process, and you were part of that. So put it to rest. The seed has been planted. You know, it's ready to be harvested. You know, different stages with just people that we connect with.
Yep. And we need to think about, you know, I appreciate those words so much because sometimes our PC-ness in the world we live today narrows things down for us to where we only think in certain categories. And we tend to pigeonhole people racially. And say, we talk about the races and that sort of thing. We talk about the rich and the poor, and we tend to categorize those ways. But there are all kinds of people with all kinds of life situations and everything. I'm leaving, in fact, this time tomorrow, I'll be on an airplane heading to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to speak for the weekend to a group of men. It's a very, they're inviting me in because this group of men, over half of them have their master's degrees and half of them have their doctor's degrees. It's a very elite educated group of guys, and about a third of them are not going to be believers. And most of them are, and the other third, another third of them are guys that are not walking with the Lord, even though they claim to be Christians and that sort of thing. And they, part of my credential was not because how great I am or anything like that. It's because I got 10 years of graduate studies behind me. And I've got at least as many degrees, if not more, than they do. And that speaks to them. So they're bringing me in to do that and to talk with them and everything. That's a group of people you think about. What category do they fall into? Who's reaching out to them and everything? We've got to, God makes all of us and wires all of us in different ways to reach different people in different ways. And we need to understand that and rejoice in that, that God wants to use you, who you are, where you are, and everything. Okay? Now, we need to think beyond just where we are as well, but that's where it has to begin. If I'm not doing it at home, if that's not something that's happening to me where I live, where I work, where I play, and that sort of thing, what are the odds it's going to happen anywhere else? It tells me something still needs to change here before things are going to change in terms of my activities and everything. Next week, we want to focus on the end of the book. We want to talk about this whole idea of getting in step with God. What is that all about? How's that different than what we often think about and all that? I want to spend about half of our time doing that, and I want to spend the last half of our time looking at Genesis 1, 1 and 2 from my perspective, okay? rather than have Mike represent my view, I would like to share my view with you, okay? So that's what we're going to do next week. Let me pray and we'll be done. Father, thank you so much for who you are. Thank you for your word. God, thank you for the thoughts, the ideas, the questions, the comments today that really enriched our time together. And I thank you for that. I pray that you would truly be a blessing to everyone here today in some way. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Hey, Rick, do you know, I've been trying to print out